Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are tickling your oral canal with the brilliant assistance of OldFootballShirts.com. Well, in the Battle of the Birds, the chip-stealing bin bag rippers came up trumps against the silver-stealing bad luck merchants, with Tom Hamed giving the good guys a 1-0 win. However, we now controversially lose Tuma for 3 games after the FA found him guilty of appearing to stamp on DeAndre Yedlin. So, we head into what is one of the most highly anticipated games on the fixture list, away at Arsenal, without a fit or available mainline striker. Joining me today as we look forward to the game at the Emirates and look back on last week's game is, of course, Alan Wares. And we're delighted to welcome back the author of the Brighton, but only at home blog, Jason Thackeray. Welcome to the show, Jason. Welcome back, even.
Thanks very much.
Are you well?
Yeah, I am well. It's great to be
here.
Should we get
rid of the elephant in the room first?
What elephant's that?
Happy birthday, Al.
Happy birthday, Al.
Al, I've done some research into this. How many people do you know that were born on the same day as you?
Sebastian Kolek, Voenta, Erika Laliniak, Matt and Luke from Bros. There's a few others, I'm sure.
I owe you nothing, yeah, indeed. Yeah. Actually, the first one I've got here, actually, was... Pompey the Great.
Pompey the Great? Who or what is Pompey the Great?
Pompey the Great was Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus, the Roman political and military leader, born in Pisaeum, Italy, in... 48 BC.
Okay, well, a Pompeius Magnus. Yeah, that's me.
I've got another. We've got Jerry Lee Lewis here on here as well.
Yes, he was.
Horatio Nelson was born on the same day as you.
Was he?
Well, not quite literally.
Well, no. The only person out of that list that we've mentioned so far that was actually born on the same day is Erika Aleniak, who was one of these Baywatch babes.
Well, that's very apt this week, because I've got two Playboy
references. Okay,
we've got Lech Walesa, who you
yeah, I mentioned him, yeah. Solidarity got, leader in Poland.
Yeah. Chris Broad.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Julie Pettersson, playmate, born in 1964. Matt Goss. Mika Hakkinen was born on the same day as you.
Fine.
Literally the same day as you.
Oh, was he? Him as well?
Andrei Shevchenko.
Yes.
And Per Mertesacker as well, all on the same day as you.
Zimey. Well, happy birthday to me.
As well as Nikita as well.
Nikita.
Nikita.
Nikita being?
Nikita Panin. He was the Russian Earl and diplomat who was involved in the plot against Peter III. Elton John wrote a song about him.
Plot against who?
Peter III.
Oh, right, okay.
Apparently, there you go. So happy birthday, Al. So that's that.
I share some a birthday with some write-down skulldugger or buggerers.
Actually, Mike Post as well. There's another one.
Mike Post, he wrote the theme tune to the A-Team and to... other TV series might have even been Baywatch for all I know.
The Rockford Files?
The Rockford Files, yeah.
Hill Street Blues? Magnum P.I.?
Well, I knew he was a TV theme writer. He didn't write the theme tune to the Albion Roar. That was Mike Vickers, who might have been born on September the 29th. Who knows?
Henry Harrington, the composer? Yeah. Peter Van the Para?
You have just...
Is he related to Rajiv?
I don't know. Well, I suspect not. He was born in...
Have you just been ram-raiding Wikipedia for the sake of using up
Peter Van der Par was born in 1714. So.
Well, it's highly possible.
There we go. And my personal favourite, Jean-Luc Ponty. But
I want to know what para is, because Vanla is of the... So I want to know what para refers to. It must be some, ancient sort of a house of ill repute.
Well done, Al. You can have that list. So happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Hang on, by the way, you've gone random raiding through Wikipedia. Am I on that list?
No, you are not on that list.
Outrageous.
It's Wikipedia, though, so you can put yourself...
It wasn't actually Wikipedia, actually.
What was it, then?
It was some...
Don't tell me, I don't care. Hello, Jason, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
So, Jason, let's start talking about Newcastle, then. No, apparently, you totally told us just before we went on air that you haven't written the Brighton but only at home blog for the Newcastle game. So, what were your general overriding thoughts?
My general overriding thoughts of the Newcastle game was we played really, really well, particularly in the second half. The first half, I thought the build up was pretty good in the middle. I actually sort of tweeted at half time that we looked pretty decent in the middle of the park, but not so great at either end. Newcastle had a great chance that they really should have put away.
Yeah, and, I mean, I've got that down
we
here.
To take out Knockhart with our best chance.
Yeah. So, well, so you knock him. Oh, I think it was knocked him over, wasn't it? Yeah, it's
close, it?
I know that that fellow wants to get involved in everything. I know Chris Hughton's mentioned about the fact that Knockhart hasn't really sort of got to the races just. Well, he's probably at the races, just not at the football just yet. But I know he wants to get involved. But stopping Pascal Gross's goal-bound shot, which actually stopped
we'll
the
prominence
in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, but actually, Anthony, we will talk about Anthony though, because I actually thought, I mean, he had his best game of the season.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, of what I've seen. Yeah. And I think it took him a little bit of time to get over the injury, and
one of those... he missed quite a lot of pre-season as well.
Yeah,
so back on the same page.
Got kicked over at Watford. I understand he's pretty good at Watford. So, yeah.
But okay, well, I mean, the team news mainly was Bruno came in for Rashinha and
Liam Rose Z, as he's now known.
But there was also a place for Krul and Schelotto on the bench alongside the fifth again, Izzy Brown.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was. It's a funny thing, Newcastle. You think, is this one of those games where you fancy taking the points? I suppose outside the top six, where we're probably all of the opinion, we've written off each of those 12 games. And anything we get from them is a nice little handsome Brucey bonus. Fine, fantastic. So you think, is Newcastle one of those you fancy? Because last season, we were two big fish in a smaller pond.
Wouldn't even say we were a big fish in that particular pond, but...
We were one of the definitely going to be one of the favourites. I mean, don't forget what happened the previous season. We missed out on promotion by a Nats Watsit, and we then started. We were, you know, people saw that we were there to be sort of beaten, to be overtaken, and bear in mind it should have been Newcastle and probably Norwich as well. We were certainly one of the bigger hitters in the division last season. This season, I mean, you know, so many pundits already having written us off. That's not to say our season won't crash and burn, but so many pundits have already written us off, and we've already got some points on the board, unlike the burning smell up the road. So it's an interesting one. You think, are we actually kind of on a par with Newcastle? You know, last season, they only overtook us on the last day of the season, and that's only because we cocked it up. This season, we've turned them over, having done a little number on them. So, you know, if we're going to be measured anywhere, I think that Newcastle is not necessarily a bad sort of thing. That maybe
I wouldn't particularly say we turned them over, Jason. Though, but I mean, one thing that myself and show regular Andy Bass mentioned was that it is actually just a bloody good game of football. Both teams are actually attacking each other and trying to score.
Yeah, it was. It was a very, really good game of football. I mean, going back to the previous one, everyone else I spoke to fancied us to win it, apart from me. My son had I do a £1 bet for my son on the correct score for every game, and he called it as 1-0 to us.
You got your son gambling already?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And you won...
No, you never start too early.
Okay.
And you won £2.50.
And £6.50.
£6.50?
13-2, was
it? That was his pocket money.
Yeah, I mean, I digress. My mate Steve, whose birthday it was, he fancied us to win.
Who does he share his birthday with? No, okay.
God knows. But yeah, everyone fancied us to win.
Yeah.
Because they really haven't... They've done very little transfer business, and we have. And whatever we say about the lack of a striker, we've strengthened in every single other area.
Mm.
And they hadn't. And it was apparent that we were more on a par with them.
Yeah.
We competed with them more than we did at home last season when we were 10 minutes away from beating them 1-0 anyway.
We played better against them this season than we did last season.
Definitely.
I mean, we were turned over horribly.
Well, they did the double overs last season.
Well, yeah, but, you know, if you're going to look at it that way, we did the double over... they did the double over us. We did the double over Blackburn. Blackburn did a double over them, you know. So it just gives you an idea of the crazy topsy-turvy world of the Championship. What I'm saying is that this season, or, you know, last week, we played better against them much better than we did in the previous two matches last season. I mean, like I say, up there, turned over, Shane Duffy's debut, bit horrible. Sam Baldock gets a red card. Last season at home, yeah, we're 1-0 up, but we're sort of scrapping. They get the mossiest goal in the world and then sort of like get the 88th minute winner. Gutting, but I think the thing that's changed, what's improved is actually, whisper it, is that our defence has actually tightened up a little.
Yeah, but I mean, there were still chances for them, and the first chance did actually fall for Newcastle, and it was a clever corner from them, as Richie plays it to the far apex of the box, but Mourinho's volley is brilliantly saved by Matt Ryan.
Who saw that at the very last minute, didn't he?
He did see that at the last minute, and that was a fantastic save. I've been a little bit harsh on Ryan. I didn't think he had the had the best of starts, but he's starting to prove me wrong, which is fantastic. I hope he proves me
wrong. There's a touch of Stockdale about that, though, wasn't there? Because he didn't have the greatest of starts, and people were writing him off
straight away. His greatest of starts was about half a season and not actually communicating properly with Lewis Dunk. I mean, the not greatest of starts that he had with us was shots going straight through him, you know, against Madrid and what have you. I mean, it was always the shots that go straight at him that worried me most, but, you know, he seems to have, you know. I mean, and also the fact that, I'm going to mention it, but, you know, it was mentioned right when he was first signed, is the consideration of his height. It doesn't seem to be an issue, or the relative lack of it. He's about 2 or 3 inches smaller than most goalkeepers.
Well, we'll talk about the Arsenal game later, but, I mean, I think that could be an issue this weekend. But.
It could, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's still a communication issue there as well. He had a mix-up with Duffy, I think, in the second half. In general terms, he's been miles better the last couple of games.
If you're talking to one about the thing I'm thinking of, actually, I think that the pair of them, I mean, yeah, there was a slight mix-up, but I think at the end of the day, yes, it looked like Duffy gave away a soft corner.
Yes,
but the alternative being is that Ryan kept coming for it, Duffy didn't stop, takes out Ryan, and if you in any clash between Ryan and Duffy, there's only going to be one winner.
Yeah,
so I think it was not
in
just
any clash between Duffy and anyone
and anything. Maybe a JCB might come out sort of a score draw.
What about a clash between Duffy and Google?
We'll come back to that one.
Knockout jigs into the Magpies' half. He lays it off to Sonny March and continues his run. March finds Gross in the box, and his volleyed shot is goal-bound until it hits. Knockouts.
Get out of the way, Knocky. Get out of the way. You can't be involved in every move like that.
I mean, he would have been onside if it had gone in off knockout. But, I mean, it was definitely goal-bound, wasn't it?
Well, it was definitely goal-bound.
He was not offside anyway because there was two players on that. Yeah, it's not a case of whether he was... Because it hit him. So, was the flag or is the flag going to go up for offside or is it going to go up for a goal kick? It doesn't actually matter. But, yes, it did hit him. To self... Pascal Gross's shots are going to be on target, so get out of the way.
But that move was
wonderful.
Started by my man of the match on the day, which was Dale Stevens, and he appears to have actually come of age in the Premier League.
Yeah, Stevens has he's struggled a little bit at the start, but I think he's been getting better and better with every game, and he's got his confidence. They have. I think one of the things, I mean, Ady's just mentioned that was his man of the match. I found it really difficult to pick a man of the match on Sunday because they were all really good. But Steven certainly, I don't think he realised that those cute little touches that he does sometimes will get picked off in the Premier League to start off with, and he's realised that now. And he's partnered up with Proper very quickly as well, who I like the look of.
Well, again, Proper is another fellow who, well, I think it's a classic example. You cannot judge anything or anyone by one match. Certainly against Manchester City, and I'm talking about obviously the first day of the season, the first time we've got to see our team play in the Premier League or in a league match altogether. And like I say, Proper, the number of people that said it, including our good friend Sir Ancelot, who was, you know, prepared to throw him into his own car and drive him back to Rotterdam. Proper certainly looks, you know, the Proper thing. He is... You can see why he's playing for the Netherlands. You can see why he was playing in the top division in the Eredivisie, which is not necessarily the highest quality football, but the football he was playing was absolutely great. And you know, hats off to whoever found him because, you know, he's a proper find. Sorry, he's a proper find.
I was actually quite excited about it. My son watches all sorts of obscure football on any channel that he can get his hands on the telly in the back room away from my wife. And I've actually seen him play a game.
Yeah.
And sort of heard of him, so I was thinking, yeah, this is a really good signing. And then, his first game, Man City, there were just cries of derision every time he went near the ball. And we all walked away with our heads in our hands thinking, what's this? And actually, him and Stevens, from that moment forward, have started to form a really good partnership.
Well, the thing is, what you've got from Proper is all right, he's quite slender, but he's a big, tall, strong, robust lad. I mean, if anything, he's just probably a slightly taller version of Stevens in as much as he can tackle. He knows he's got good positional awareness. He knows how to spot a good pass. He's prone to the odd sort of howler. But what we've got there is two people who are very disciplined in what they do, sitting in front of an equally disciplined back four.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, the chances kept them falling for the Magpies.
You realise we're going to get stuffed against Arsenal for being so ill-disciplined. Sorry, I'm just... Yeah. That's my caveat, okay? Carry on, Edie, sorry. Yeah.
And there was a massive chance for Hosseluu after his turn leaves him with time to find the back of the net, but he fired wide. It was a great turn, but he really should have scored, shouldn't he?
Yeah, he should have scored. I thought it was in. I don't know how he missed.
I think he might have even closed his eyes. I think he probably just didn't realise how much. Well, not how, he didn't have a lot of time, but he had enough time to turn, pause, and then kick the ball in. I mean, he probably just thought that Ryan was, you know, just about to grab the ball from his feet because it was such a howler from Dunk to let the ball go through. Well, he almost backheeled it to him.
Yeah, he almost did, yeah.
Yeah, a cute little back heel, wrong end. I think he just didn't realise he had more time. If he realised that, then it was 1-0 and quite easy. He just sort of turned, shot and shanked it.
Mm. Okay, well, we got to half-time at 0-0, but it wasn't long into the second half when Tom Hemed was brought down 5 yards outside the box. Gross plays it across to the side of the six-yard box where Stevens heads it back across and Hemed hooks it home.
Good finish. Good work. What's his face? The Benitez moaning his backside.
Yeah, one of the other notes I've got written down here is it says Benitez whinges more than Allen.
What do I have to whinge about?
If that's possible.
What do I have to whinge about? I think that I'm delighted that we're in the Premier League. I'm not happy with Knockhart's contribution so far, but, you know, I'm delighted we're here. No, he was trying to find any old excuse, and in this instance he said that half his players were fouled, or certainly one of them was fouled.
Well, I mean, to be honest,
do something called the block.
Well, yeah, but what Benitez had conveniently forgotten that the two the games which they won 1-0, I think it was, prior to that with LaSalle scoring, were almost identical with people blocking off other people's runs. It happens every game.
It happens at every set piece. So, I'll be honest, we get our 11-year-olds to do it. Happens at every single set piece.
So technically, yes, it was Bruno probably was involved in an illegal action. But... It was certainly...
Well, what I found interesting, watching Match of the Day 2, where we, you know, had nearly all the show to ourselves, which was great, that's not going to happen again, was Lascelles came on to have a natter with, Chappers and Sidwell and Jermaine Genus. And I found his approach really, really good and really interesting. And you realised also, I think, he was trying to be careful and diplomatic, because what you felt he wanted to say was going to contradict Benitez. Now, what he was trying to say was, I'm not so sure it was a foul. It's just one of those things that happens. We all know the block, whereas Benitez obviously was moaning about the block. And, of course, for his captain to come out and say something completely different, not good form. Yeah. What he did actually say, a lot more honestly, was, but having said that, we know about the block and we didn't defend it properly. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of an interesting insight there, saying, yeah, we were suckered into it. We fell for it. It was poor on our part.
But I also noticed that none of the Newcastle players were complaining about it at the time.
No, they weren't. It was a tremendous free kick. It's a brilliant training ground routine. Yeah. So pleased. It was Steve's first game of the season. He's been away for the other couple. And I said to him, Pascal Gross takes a fantastic set piece. And he sort of looked at me, and then, you know, 2 minutes later, the ball was in the net.
Well, quite. I mean, I can't have a feeling that Benitez was just saying for this for home crowd, for his crowd, because apparently, you know, the Newcastle Chronicle reported that the Amex was as quiet as a grave apart from the raucous, ongoing, permanent noise of the Newcastle fans. And you think, hang on, which soundtrack do you think you were listening to? Sorry, that noise you heard was not Geordie's, it was local people. How did you refer to them at the top of the show? Bin bag dipping.
Oh, what the Geordies? It was.
We are the what?
We are the chip stealing bin bag rippers.
Yes,
and they are the silver stealing bad luck merchants. Yeah,
you went on a long journey for that one, didn't you?
Probably.
Yeah. Good. No. I like it.
I did put some work in, you know.
Just for UK, yes, we do put some work into this. Well, AD does anyway.
But Jason, on our pre-season show where we do our predictions, one thing that was very apparent was that when we were predicting who we think was going to be the best signing of pre-season. The one name that came up was either new striker, who we didn't sign, or Pascal Gross.
Yeah, I said new striker, but I mean, Pascal Gross is a fantastic signing. I've been so impressed with him since he started. His work rate, the amount that he runs, his set pieces, he's creative, he can shoot, he's just got everything. To pick him up for £3 million, the guy's already got in a European team of the European team of the week for done by Coriella de Sera, in the week when he scored two goals against West
Brom.
Yeah,
but there was a Palace player in that one at that team as well that week.
I'm not sure how they managed that. What have we told you? I mean, Ofcom, we'll come down us like a ton of bricks. We cannot swear on air, AD. Please don't say that word again.
He's just been a brilliant signing. Absolute bargain. I think it's the frustrating thing about our transfer window is immediately after it closed, I went on the blog and wrote a large rant saying how the heck could we miss out on the striker. And it was interesting listening to Paul Barber last week on this show saying how we did. But it looks to me now like all of the other players that have come in, probably with the exception of the... Is it Schletto?
Schlotto.
Yeah. I can never say it properly. I'm a worse lady. Everyone who's had a run out has looked decent. Yeah. Izquierdo, we don't know anything about yet.
Not enough.
And the same with Schlotter. But Gross, proper, and even
Sutton's okay.
He had a hard time off paper. It was interesting that he was almost being protected at the end of the West Brom game by Solly March playing left wing back. But I think Sutton had a cracking game against. Again, it was very.
Is it just a case of finding your feet at this level?
It could well be.
And taking the time to settle.
Gross has done it. Prupp has done it. You know, I mean, left back is. Whenever, and we'll do this maybe a little later, whenever you come up with an 11 of, you know, whether it's going to be bearded 11, short name 11. Ginger, whatever you're going to come up with, something 11, you always struggle with the left back, don't you? I mean, the left back is really the poor relation of a football team. How many world-class left backs have there ever been? And I do not count Roberto Carlos in here. Famous for one free kick. Apart from that, a total donkey.
Kenny Sansom.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And look what happened to him.
Carlos Alberto was a left back, wasn't he? No, he wasn't.
No.
No. Wayne Bridge looked pretty decent for us.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, this is the height that we get. I mean, when you talk about famous footballers down the years, left back,
it's always the one. Yeah, always the one you can't think of. Okay, but I mean, go back to Gross. I mean, I've got a thing down here. He volleys a stunning pass to Knockhart, who backheels to Bruno. Bruno fires the ball across the ball into the corridor of uncertainty, and Solly March slides in, but Elliot in the Newcastle goal somehow keeps it out.
I think Solly March did very well to get it on target in the first place, because he was at such a narrow angle. Actually, we've had this discussion, and I don't want to sort of prejudice your opinion on this, Jason, but we talked about a lot of the other players so far. How do you think that Solly March has coached in the Premier League so far this year?
Solly March I've been very impressed with. I think he looks a natural fit, and I think I've said him and Dunk, if they have a really good standout season, have a chance of going to the World Cup if we qualify, and it looks very much like we will. He's again done a lot of work, done a lot of running. He's found it tough. He doesn't quite go past people at the same pace. One of the things with Yedlin, I know we're going to talk about Hamed a bit later, but certainly Yedlin was beating him in the air all of the time and was able to keep up with him for pace as well. But it didn't deter him. He got into good positions. The chance crossed off the line. He was involved in the build-up to the one we should have scored when we hit Knockhart.
Confident prediction here. I'm going to make a confident prediction for about 18 months' time. I don't think that Dunk nor March, neither Dunk nor March, will make it to the England squad before the World Cup, and certainly won't go to Russia. What will happen, I'm pretty certain, really reasonably certain, is assuming they improve as they are and we don't get relegated, is that they will be part of the new set of people coming in after the catastrophic exit at the hands of
Uzbekistan.
I was about to say Burkina Faso or or the Isle of Wight or whatever it is. You know, North Korea. Yeah,
Newport County.
I think WI. I think the horrific second round exit that we have in Russia, and then when the new squad and probably the new manager is announced, then you know the new broom comes in, and that's when the likes of Duncan March, assuming they can improve and assuming we're still in the Premier League, that's when they come in.
You could well be right. I think it's probably a bit of a stretch to say they could be in the World Cup squad, but I just think they're now in the shop window and everyone can see what they're doing.
I'm not so sure there's too many people between what constitutes the current squad and them. I mean, that gap is closing.
Yeah.
But and the point is that in order to get into a World Cup squad, you have to prove yourself at the top level.
I mean,
and
neither
of them have actually done too badly.
To be fair, I mean, centre half is a position which we are traditionally strong. I mean, look at our own production line. We've got another centre half in Ben White coming up through the ranks as well. And you know, it's one area where we have been consistently able to produce players. It's the forward players where we've always had problems. And it's nice the fact that Solly March, who is one of our own, is coming through.
Stop diving.
Well, he did it once. I think he's learned his
lesson.
He's done
it. No, he's been booked more than once for diving. It's just get that out of his game. I'm not sure. Hopefully, he has.
Okay.
Because the one he did it against West Brom, Jason. It was awful.
It was the most obvious dive I've seen.
Okay. I mean, you're talking about players who could go on and play for England. I'm going to mention someone. It's probably controversial. It's not one of our players. And he's certainly not flavour of the week with many people. But Jonjo Shelvey, whatever the baggage that goes with him, he is one hell of a footballer.
He's decent. But that's the point is the baggage that comes with it. Unless I don't think, well, I'm too out of order here by saying I'm not so sure that having such an overt racist in the England side is such a good idea. Even if, you know, whether your qualities can outshine your off-field considerations. And we're into sort of whether sport and socio-politics actually do mix.
Well, we do that earlier.
But it's not good form to have someone who has been, you know, maybe they can one day down the line, you know, atone for their stuff, but you know, he got found out. So,
okay. Jason, one thing that you did want to talk about was there was a mass relief at the final whistle, but you wanted to talk about how the Amex has come of age.
The Amex has come of age. The atmosphere at the Amex has come of age. The atmosphere at the West Brom game Man City was pretty good, but West Brom, you're thinking, well, this isn't a big side now. It might go a bit quieter. It didn't. If anything, we pitched it up another notch. The West Stand upper, the second half in the Newcastle game was just definite. Everybody was up. Everybody was standing, clapping, cheering. Nobody went home early from the West Upper. I know there's quite a few that do from the East, and they've got their reasons. I don't want to get
kids
into that. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But the West Upper was still packed, and every single player was cheered off. The sound of relief when the final whistle went, you could probably hear in Eastbourne, but you could have heard the songs there as well.
Yes.
It was just immense.
Even Henry Winter, who's been there and done it around the World Cups and whatever, he commented on how amazing the atmosphere was.
And if you bear in mind that Henry Winter, if he was there, he would have been sitting downstairs in the West Stand Lower. I'm pretty certainly wouldn't have been upstairs in the top of the West Stand. If he was, then he wouldn't have been able to hear himself write it, let alone think it. And it also shows just how ludicrous the Newcastle Chronicle statement was about the noise. Yeah, there was a lot of noise, but believe me, it wasn't the Newcastle fans. Yeah, they made some noise, but yeah, you're quite right. Those last 5 minutes. Yeah, with the West Brom game, when we got to about 15 minutes to go and you realised the tide was turning, our players looked dead on the feet and West Brom had brought on a couple of subs that they could up their game. Yes, we went a bit quiet, a bit nervous. And then we got to realise that, you know, as the final whistle got closer and closer, so the noise level went up. And so that when it was full time, you know, hey, brilliant. Not only have we got our first goals, we've got our first points and everything's brilliant. And we've turned over a totally Pulis side and not a bad one at that. We do exactly the same again. Hang on against Newcastle, against whingy whiny Benitez, hashtag more whiny than me. And we are quite right. I think, and I hope that as the season goes on and we can actually get these home wins, that, let's face it, there is not one game this season, apart from Palace at home, sorry, I've just sworn again, whereby a home win or any win is not going to be treated with anything other than a huge raucous cheer, because it has to be.
Yeah.
Jason, what is your opinion on this whole sitting back and inviting pressure in the last minutes when you're defending a win? Surely it's best to be playing on the front foot, or at least try and keep the football. So
it makes me incredibly nervous, and we do it a lot. We haven't just done it in the Premier League. I took a photo of I've got a heart rate monitor on my running watch, and I took a photo at QPR and it was on 170 or something. And that was a game we were leading 2-0 at one point.
Yeah.
So it seems to be something that Houghton, he would rather we concede that way than we go on the front foot, open up holes and get hit on the break, I think. It just wants us to keep our shape for the whole 90 minutes.
It's very rare that it's that we've been undone by it, though. Mm. I mean, we don't like it.
No,
it's horrible to go through it, but we're very good at it.
Yeah, we are.
Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago.
I'm not so sure we didn't know. I think Bournemouth aren't their game. I don't think Bournemouth is actually a good example.
Jordan Ibe changed that game.
Yes, he did.
They brought a creative player on, and he created their two chances.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's a good example. I mean, West Brom and Newcastle games, absolutely good examples. And there's other ones late last season where we've done that, where you think, you know, I think what we had also last season was when we had Knockhart and Baldock fit, we had an outlet by which we could actually then play it up to one of them, who would then go and run it into the corner or have another go or whatever it might be, which then relieves the pressure a wee bit, even if it's only for 2 minutes. At the moment, because we are so bereft of forward players who can A, run, and B, hold the ball up, yeah, the ball comes straight back. Mm. It's not good form. But so far...
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM online. It's like conducting an orchestra on RadioReverb.com.
A drunk orchestra.
Yeah, not yet. On our podcast and, of course, on DAB, we are brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. I do have a shirt of the week, which I'm just going to hand over to Jason to describe for me here.
Oh, wow.
Can you see if you can describe the shirt for me?
I certainly can. It is a blue shirt with blue and white striped arms, I believe, and a white collar. And it has a rather famous band name on the front. It's Bad Manners. I'm assuming this is a Canvey Town shirt.
No, it's not Canvey.
Is it Canvey?
No.
Is it Margate?
It is Margate.
Yeah. Sorry,
yes, because he had a hotel there called Fatty Towers.
Yeah, was that the one that sold seven pies in a baguette as one
that
of their menu
of thing,
options?
Yeah. Yeah, even though the Buster Blood Vessel himself has actually slimmed down quite a lot. But yes. So I think if we just got this right, by the way.
Yes.
Margate.
It is Margate.
Okay, let's say what's Phil said about it.
So here is the shirt of the week. It's the 1996-97 Margate home shirt. Margate play in the Bostic Premier League alongside the likes of Worthing, Leatherhead and Kingstonian. They are imaginably named the Gate, and they play at the 3,000 capacity Hartsdown Park Stadium. The highest attendance recorded for a Margate match at Hartsdown Park was 14,169 for the visit of Spurs in the FA Cup in 1973. So how did the name of the underrated 80s ska revival band end up on the shirts of non-league Margate FC? Well, in 1996, now you got this right as well, Buster Blood Vessel moved to Margate to open a hotel called Fatty Towers. The same year he opened the hotel, it was also the Gate centenary season, and Buster decided to sponsor the team. There you go.
Fantastic.
There is more. He said Margate haven't had any particular famous names, but both Terry Yeoff and Neville Southall have both managed the club.
I think that they were the ones that were victim of an 11-0 cup defeat at the hands of Bournemouth in the early 70s as well, where Ted McDougall famously scored 9 goals in one match. How selfish is that?
Mm-hmm. There we go. Well, we've got to talk about Tom Ahmed. Now, this all happened after the event, so we're talking about it after the event.
Mm-hmm.
There was the alleged stamp. It has, well, there was a lot of people saying it was deserved.
He wasn't done for a stamp. A stamp is not actually in the citation. It's a violent conduct. Now, a stamp, to me, I don't know, I'll throw this one open. A stamp is a deliberate... it's a deliberate action whereby it's almost as if the leg is drawn back in order for it to be thrown down.
Much as one would see Joey Barton commit on Berham Kyle,
that kind
sort
of thing.
Thing.
Whereas, I mean, we are looking at this with blue and white tinted specs on, and we're looking at someone who tried to jump over in a little bit of a tiny melee on the pitch when the ball was sort of, you know, there to be won. Could Hemed have made a better effort to get over his legs? We don't know. We have to look inside the mind. This is where we need Freud on the pitch to actually say what is going through Hemed's mind at the time, at the moment, that this particular coming together, collision, stamp, call it what you will, happened. Now, somewhere down the line, we don't know what the level of where the bar is set as to what constitutes violent conduct and therefore constitutes a ban. What seems to be is that just standing on his leg is enough, whether accidental or not.
Well, the kangaroo court decided that...
you've decided, haven't you?
Well, I mean...
I'm with Aidy.
I cannot see, I mean, how that... I mean, the ref didn't see it at the time, but you can normally tell by the reaction of the Newcastle players. No one was doing anything about it.
The Newcastle players didn't see
it. You watched the match the other day too. They didn't even deem to mention it. They mentioned it, oh, there's a little that something, but they didn't talk about it afterwards.
Sky were the only people.
And then if you look at it again and again and again, as you do,
yes.
Hemed's trying to get over him. The ball is the other side of him.
Yeah.
Yedlin's like on the floor. He's trying to protect himself, which you would do.
Yeah.
But his leg slightly comes forward. It catches Hemed, who's trying to get over him, and it puts him slightly off balance, and he lands on his leg.
But you're
he did not try and jump on me. He did not try and stamp on me. He was trying to get over him. It's not violent
for him. But if he was trying to get over him, is there you have to then consider. I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate. I mean, we can always say, oh, he's not that sort of person. Well, he has clearly just trod on someone. But you have to then consider, could he have made a better effort in trying to get over him? It's not as though Yedlin actually stopped him from, I don't know, putting his foot out further. I don't know. He didn't jump on him. He didn't stamp on him. We've got to say it as it is. He trod on him. You can't argue with that.
No,
he trod
can't.
On him. So you've then got to consider what is going through. And it's evident that the whole thing of deliberate.
Players get trodden on left, right and centre in an accidental manner. And no one bats an eyelid about it. It's just the spectacle of the television cameras picking up every single tiny nuance that's in the game. And
if you hadn't had super slow-mo in Sky there, that never would have gone to the FA. That's
no.
the point.
Yeah.
Playing devil's advocate.
And the fact that this kangaroo court that of the right. who I wanted to know who these referees. I can tell you who he wasn't, because Dermot Gallagher and Graham Pohl were not on this thing, because they said there's no problem with it.
They said there was no case to answer. Exactly. Playing devil's advocate, I think there was something going on. I don't think they were best of friends, Yedlin and Hemed, and I don't think Yedlin and March were either, because every time he went up for a header, and he won a lot of them, he led with his arm and went through the back of the player. We were actually commenting on Yedlin doing that before the incident. But even if you watch it in the super slow-mo, Hemed's up on his tiptoes.
Yes.
You do that when you're playing, I can tell you now, to avoid the player in front of you. There's no other point for putting the brakes on than you're avoiding something. And he then falls over and lands on him, as far
this
as
bit
concerned.
I get. This bit I get. And I don't think anyone's really sort of... Well, there are some Newcastle fans, but then, you know, we've worked out what fans in the North East are like when it comes to, you know, working out what damage it sort of really looks like. What the issue seems to be is... If we say, you know, and we acknowledge that Hemed trod on Yedlin, yes. Could he have done a little bit more to have avoided doing so? Very possibly. We don't know where the bar is set as to what the level of culpability and guilt is there for. It could be so low. Yes, we're looking at... The reason Joey Barton...
He's unfortunate here.
Yeah. The reason Joey Barton didn't get done is because the referee saw it and wrongly thought it was accidental. Even then, if he thought it was accidental, well, clearly with... Hemed, it was accidental, but because it was therefore done with at that time, I don't know if there's a mechanism in place whereby the FA, you know, if someone, I don't know, headbutts someone or punches someone right in front of the referee and he doesn't do anything about it, technically that's the end of the matter. Where you realise, hang on a minute, he's just punched his lights out, he's on the floor there, he's not waking up for 3 days. Of course,
that's violent conduct.
It's violent conduct, but my point is, if the referee didn't see it. But, can it then be dealt with?
But we did throw this open as well. We asked the question for a top five controversial refereeing moments in Albion history. And we've had a few people come back on this.
Go on.
Including you, Jason, actually. Yeah. the first one was Ki-Wen Chung, who mentioned the Jimmy Kayes issue for not wearing his hearing aid at Leicester.
That was slightly ridiculous, that one, wasn't it?
And
he didn't get a hearing either.
Some bloke on here called Alan Wares, he said, Virgo getting a second yellow for violently tackling no one.
Do you not remember that game?
That was against Sunderland, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was going around, it was like a man possessed that day anyway, but he just sort of went flying in on the ball and went going all the way back to the goalkeeper. Ref went yellow card, and you think, well, hang on, there was no Sunderland player nearby.
Yeah. Simon Levinson, he said, Eric Cantona for not getting a knighthood. That is controversial.
It's only because he's French. He'd need the Légion d'honneur.
He says this is. I don't see this as being controversial, but he says Andy Rollins sending off v Norwich seemed a tad harsh given the treatment he received from Fashion. He lamped him. He lapped him.
Yes, there's a red card. I think the point is that in today's parlance, they'd have both got a red card way before Rollings would have lapped him. Mm. But yeah, and I think it was Rollings. I think it was that Rollings' last ever game as well for us, wasn't it? Mm.
Guy Preston here said Sam Bullock at Newcastle last season for
funny one that one.
He won the ball, got taken out by the keeper, who injured himself in the process, and he received the red.
Well, he got taken out by the keeper, but it's just the way he went in. He didn't win the ball. I think he was trying to sort of stop a clearance, but it's the way he went in was. Yeah, it looked worse than it was, but you know he didn't actually do anything to knock the keeper over. But it was kind of stops him mid kick, but. Of all people, I mean, you're saying about Sky were the ones who picked up on it. I mean, it was Graham Souness, and I heard a lovely comment when I was at the cricket during the week when it was Graham Souness, of all people, picking up on violent conduct. He said it's like a serial killer moaning about a parking ticket.
And then Joey Barton went on TalkSport and said it was a three-game ban without any sense of irony whatsoever.
No. Yeah. No, Joey Barton doesn't do irony and really wouldn't be welcome on here even if he, you know.
Moya Jackson's ones. Hi, Moya. Ashley Barnes' accidental stamp against Burnley and accidentally clipping the referee.
Yes. Well, I think the thing that we feel
was
about...
Was it accidental?
The one against the tripping the referee you're talking about, or the stamp.
Tripping the ref.
That
wasn't accidental.
No.
I like Alexandra Hunter. She said, Glenn Murray v Sheffield Wednesday for handball when all he was trying to do was protecting his lovely face.
That never smiles.
But obviously the one that got mentioned most is, of course, Dale Stevens last season against Middlesbrough. The season before now, wasn't it? But it's one that it still rankles with me.
I'm still angry about that. I'm never going to let that go.
It won't be until such time as A, we play Borough.
Mike Dean was on that kangaroo cork panel, wasn't he?
I bet he was.
Yeah. I bet he was.
Wearing a Palace shirt. Sorry, Al.
Oh, we just swore again, and we are Reverb is in such
has
trouble
Mike
now.
Been, has Mike Dean actually been banned from attending the Amex for on
one would like
safety
to think
reasons?
So. One would like to think.
I think we might have to work with Darren Balcombe about this. Well, Darren, if you're listening,
make sure Dean will be
a riot if he gets anywhere near the Amex. Trust me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, Al, you wanted to talk about sport v politics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of us have read the Liam Rossini piece.
Yeah,
that was in the Guardian.
He's got a column in the Guardian. It's an excellent piece. I'm so glad he's moved from the unmentionable paper. Hashtag going to get taken off the air if we keep swearing. Whereby he's actually sort of gone into the realms of politics, albeit US politics. There's the take a knee. It's not even a campaign. It's a I don't know what you call it. It's a movement. To protest against what a lot of people are feeling is civil rights and social justice infringements in the US. And he's actually written, you know, in plain English, how much he appreciates and stands up for and shows solidarity with that. And it just got to, there was a few people saying, yes, proud to have Liam Rossini on board. You know, he's one of us, he's an intelligent. That bit I'm not talking about. What I'm saying is, what I was going to suggest, and I'll throw this open to Jason here, is it depends on which aspect of politics we're talking about here is, do sport and politics mix? And a lot of people think they shouldn't. The answer is they can't not.
Yeah.
They're both important parts of the fabric of our society.
We're just going to end up agreeing with each other like a Stuart Lee gig or something. I mean, Liam Rossini put in the piece that sport and politics have to mix. You've said it. I agree 100%.
When I was talking to you on the phone about this earlier, Al, you came out with a statement which was I thought it was quite a stunning statement. It was really good. Should sport mix with politics? You said no, sport should mix with politics, but politics shouldn't mix with sport.
Well, even that, I think that probably is a little bit too much of a sort of a facile statement. There'll probably be examples where politics does need to get involved in sports. Off the top of my head, I can't think of one, but if I actually then sort of went to the pub and had a good conversation about it with someone intelligent, then I probably could. But certainly, once I suppose that government and politics therefore could get involved in sport, in as much as, let's say, for instance, the way that the FA runs itself does need a good kick up the backside, and someone's got to get involved in doing that. Now, you think the irony of, sorry, I know we're not, we are officially a party politically neutral show, and we don't actually go down this road, but, you know, we do have a government that's in, you know, slight bit of chaos, and for this government to actually then try and get football to get its house in order is wonderfully ironic, and yet it needs to be done. And so we have a culture, media and sport secretary who is prepared to actually haul the top boffins at the FA up in front of them and say, what on earth are you doing with football at the moment? In that sense, yes, politics could get involved in football.
What's the name of the Australian Prime Minister again? I can't remember her name.
No, it's a he anyway.
She?
It's changed about five times.
Whatever her name. She's born on the same day as you, you know. Happy birthday, yeah.
Tracy Crouch is the Secretary for Culture, Media and Sport and is hauling the FA up in front of the CMS Select Committee to say, look, you know, what on earth are you doing? And especially with the view of Mark Sampson, especially with the view of, let's go back a year, what on earth had happened with employing Sam Allardyce? Just a whole range of stuff that's gone on here.
But I mean, this is just a general thing, though, isn't it? It's just that the bureaucrats involved in running our sport, be it the FA, be it FIFA, UEFA, they all need a massive overhaul. I mean, they've got one main job, which is to organise tournaments, and they don't seem to be able to do that very well.
No, I mean, they don't. FIFA are just a laughable organisation as far as I'm concerned. And, yeah, you talk about politics, the internal politics that must go on at FIFA, but when the envelopes come round, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
It's that thing of who's going to go and do this tour this week and award this tournament to this particular place that's either full of homophobic football thugs or has temperatures of 50 degrees centigrade in summer.
It's fundamentally unsuitable to host a major international tournament. That was just the point I was going to make is that we should never be afraid to actually mix we mix pop and politics. We can mix sport and politics. I mean, I'm not necessarily on a party political line. We're not talking about that, but we shouldn't be afraid to actually consider the fact that they are both vital parts of the way that we function. And, you know, in some cases, one can actually be the saviour of the other. It can actually be to the benefit of the others. So it was just on the back of Liam Rossini's piece. Listen, you know, it's not as though he wrote anything particularly groundbreaking. It was just actually refreshing to see a current footballer speaking so articulately and intelligently.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think he was partly talking from a racial point of view as well. Mm. I think another area where sport and politics really do mix is, although black players have become much more accepted in the playing of the game, there are still not enough black and
Look at the current thing we've got here is the homophobic stuff as well. You know, homosexuality.
Yes, absolutely.
There is an air of politics to it. It's social politics.
It's social politics, but people politicise it, and therefore it needs to be talked about in the context of the sport and the context of politics.
Mm. And Al, where can you hear Liam Rossini talk articulately and intelligently?
Well, until such time as we actually change around our host server, you can still hear it on the...
I believe that will still be available on there, though.
I would hope so, too. It's going to be on the, the archive page of the Albion Raw. So that's albionraw.co.uk/archive. And yes, his show, where he doesn't talk about... Actually, he does talk about social politics very, very briefly in here. So, it's carrying on... what he's written in The Guardian is carrying on a theme that he actually sort of mentioned when he was on The Raw a few months ago.
Yeah. Did you call him Liam Rosehead?
Not at the time, no, because he wasn't playing, so he wasn't able to hoof it into the Rosehead.
He's not really playing now, to be honest.
Well, no, okay. He was properly injured. He was properly broken then.
Just another bit of housework as well. I mean, as I mentioned, the website there. We've also now got a YouTube channel, so if you can't get enough of listening to us, you can now see us as well.
Faces for Radio no longer applies.
Yeah, so we do a Facebook Live report after most games. It's normally soundtracked by the lawnmower
display team in the background. Yeah, it's we've got to find a new venue for this. Actually, it's lovely that they whisper it, but they do actually let us back out there just to record it for about 5 minutes. But I think we're going to do it. You know, the lawnmowers are a long way away. They're a good sort of 100 yards away,
they're
but they do
there.
Win. when it comes to the soundtrack.
But okay, and just again, another little bit of housekeeping for you. Just a quick reminder that this coming Sunday, obviously the Albion are away at Arsenal. Now that's been a little bit of
a ridiculous thing, isn't it, with the women's football team?
Yeah. Now they did try and move the kickoff time for this game, but if you aren't going to the Emirates, why not get yourself along to Lancing and go and watch the Seagulls, as I like to call them.
The She-Goals. Yeah, they really don't like that. I know they really don't like that.
Really?
They really don't.
Great, though.
No.
Unless you're Stephen Parent saying it.
They are Brighton and Hove Albion, so, you know. Yes, it's absolutely farcical. It kicks off exactly the same time. Paul Barber tried to get the game moved. Sky clearly don't get... I mean, Sky, I don't think even show women's football, do they?
No, it's actually it's we're on BT, BT Sport.
Well, BT Sport don't show women's football either, do they? I mean, what I'm saying is that BBC do, but the others don't.
The
so
others don't.
Their whole attitude is, well, why should we care? Plus the fact that it's Durham City. If it was a team that was closer, maybe there might be a bit more scope to move the game. But
I mean, again, I mean, we'll talk about this closer to the time when it affects us. But I mean, there's been further controversy this week in the fact that. I think it's Sky that they want to show the Arsenal Liverpool game, which is on Christmas Eve. But they want to have it at 4 o'clock kickoff, which basically means it's impossible for any Liverpool fans who want to go and watch the game. They can get back.
There is a train at 9:12. They're saying they can get back. But the ridiculous thing is that Christmas Eve, you basically hunker down with your family.
Yeah.
You close the doors. You fire up the mulled wine and I'm sorry we're talking about Christmas here in September, but, you know, Christmas Eve, what you don't do is go out and freeze your watsits off, you know, having spent 100 squillion quid going watching your favourite team. Absolutely farcical.
It's a terrible idea.
It's dreadful.
It's an absolutely dreadful
idea. It's one thing people used to say, they used to play games on Christmas Day. Yeah, that would be against a local team. If it was Liverpool-Everton, maybe. But Liverpool-Arsenal, other ends of the country, stop being arses.
Thanks, Al.
No problem. But, happy birthday to me.
Speaking of which, we are away at Arsenal this weekend, and when the fixtures came out, it's probably the first one that people were super excited about, being our first visit to the Emirates, first time since February 1983, where we lost 3-1.
To Highbury, you mean?
At Highbury,
well,
yeah.
No, we played at Highbury since then. Semi-final of the FA Cup.
This is true, but it wasn't against Arsenal.
Yes, I know, but... And it's also, this game will also represent, well, however, depends on how many turn up, but officially will be the highest ever attendance for a league game featuring Brighton and Hove Albion.
Doesn't matter how many turn up, it'll be 59,500.
Arsenal fans are planning a 27th-minute walkout in this game,
which is a little bit silly.
Apparently, this is all about the fact that the significance of the 27 is because they made a 27... million pound profit.
Jason, over to you, mate. Tell us without swearing how silly it is.
Without swearing, really, it is absolutely ridiculous. When you compare it to the not swearing that Charlton have been through, Blackpool have been through, Leighton Orient have been through, we've been through. We're not winning trophies, but we've got a bit of money. It's just absolutely pathetic.
So, Arsenal fans, you have no divine right to win trophies.
You have no divine right to win trophies. You have no divine right to walk out because you're not winning football matches. Yeah. Sit in the seat, get behind the teams, and grow a pair.
The season tickets at the Emirates are the most expensive in the country. Support the team. Don't get against them. Don't support them on Sunday. Do it after that.
But the sounds of the feet walking out will probably improve the home atmosphere, to be fair.
Well, the thing is, the ridiculous irony over this is that of all games they're going to pick to try and do this is the day they're playing us. You can just hear... Not just Premier League fans, but fans all up and down the country slapping their foreheads going, what are you doing? What are you on about? You know, as Jason said, grow a pair. Well, don't say grow a pair because they are very sort of soft and tender. And
Not something to walk out over, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Now, but again, with Arsenal, over the years we've had a fair number of loan signings and signings from all the players that have played for both teams over the years. Now, I've asked both Jason and Al to do their Albion Arsenal 11, but Jason didn't quite understand the question.
I didn't, no.
So Jason's written down a team to play this Sunday.
Yes.
But me and Al have actually done it properly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, should we... Okay, you go home with your 11 that should be playing then on Sunday then, Jace.
Well, it's got to be the 10 of the guys that started against Newcastle plus Izzy Brown up front, because we don't think Murray's fit enough. So right. I thought that was a bit too simple, but
right.
Yeah. I've been thinking on the actual question as we've been going. I think I've got up to three.
Would you start with Knockaert and March then?
Yes.
Do you think that we should have someone more defensive in midfield? Not I can think of anyone else that's fit at the moment.
No,
but
I don't. They're big and slow at the back. I think you need two quick players, and I think March will suddenly drop into that left wing back position if he needs to.
Okay. Actually, against Man City, he was pretty much playing as a wing back, wasn't he? Yeah. He was playing quite deep. Mm. And defensively, yeah, he's quite good. Well, which makes me almost think that Izquierdo might get the nod ahead of Knockaert because he's defensively better, maybe.
Is he?
I've not seen Izquierdo defend.
I don't think anyone can actually... They've only seen Izquierdo play for 5 minutes. All right, they did in the Bournemouth League Cup game, for those that turned up. I'm not sure how the charge can be made about how good or bad or, you know, indifferent he is compared to everyone else. So.
The best defensive winger we've got is Murphy.
Probably. Right, go on then. You go first with your goalkeeper, mate.
Rami Shaban.
That's all I've got as well. I can't think of anyone else, actually. I'm sure there is.
Graham Stack. No, he never played for us. I'm sure he's on loan at some point.
I'm not sure. We're basically talking about, as best we can, people who have played for the Albion and for Arsenal. If we can't find that, then we'll go for the ones where there's a good link. And if we really can't find that, we'll go for ones where there's a tenuous link.
Yeah, so fullbacks. Quickly, we are running out of time.
Okay, go on then.
Fullbacks, who have you got?
I've got left-back Sammy Nelson.
Sammy Nelson.
And right-back Martin Keown.
Interesting, yeah, okay. There is a possibility that you could have actually had...
Well, bearing in mind he played full-back for us, is that...
Yeah, you could have had Gavin Hoyt.
I forgot Gavin Hoyt, or you could have Joel Carroll.
Oh, I forgot about him. Thanks. I'm glad I forgot about him. Yeah. Or you could go with a three at the back with Willie Young, Martin Keown and Colin Pates.
You could have that, or my two centre-backs, I've gone with Steve Gatting and Matthew Opson.
Ooh, genius.
Which I think is actually a pretty strong back four, isn't it? Upson, Gatting, and Keown.
Upson could play full-back as well, yeah.
Okay, right, who have you got in midfield then? We're talking about 4-4-2 here.
This is tenuous because never actually played for us, but midfield of Liam Brady.
Yeah.
Steve Sidwell.
Yeah.
And I've got wide, I've got Paul Dickhoff.
Mm. And Dickhoff was a centre forward.
He did play in midfield.
I've got a centre forward,
And I've got Graham Barrett.
Graham Barrett was a forward as well.
He was a midfielder.
Okay, I've got two central midfielders of, even though he never played for the first Arsenal first team, was Steve Sidwell, and someone who did play for them was Mark Flats. And then I've got out wide, I've got someone who didn't play for the Arsenal first team but did play at Arsenal. That's Albert Jarrett.
He's on my list.
Yeah. And left midfield, I've got Mike Tiddy, who played 48 times for Arsenal, for 55 to 58, and 133 times for the Albion, 58 to 62.
Yeah. Up front?
Stapleton and Dickhoff.
Okay.
No Akpom.
No. Akpom, he's not even so much on the bench, he's actually making the bench.
I've got slightly different one. I've got Stapleton and Raphael Meade.
I've got Meade on the bench. My bench includes Hoyt, Willie Young, Colin Pates, Joel Carroll, Tuba Akpom's there, Raphael Meade, Graham Barrett, Bradley Johnson, who was there as a youth player.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
very quickly, I've got Liam Brady, and I've also got, and I can't believe we missed out on completely, Steve Burtonshaw, who played 237 times for the Albion and was caretaker manager at Arsenal during the 80s.
And that is it. Well, that's all we've got time for. So happy birthday to Bruno this weekend. Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Jason Thackeray. I've been Aidy Packham. We'll see you again next week. Thanks a lot.